everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to talk about Apocalypse, Episode 2, The Morning After. And if you thought the first episode was stupid, this one ended in a way that made me go, no, come on, no. So look forward to that. I'm joined as always by Slow Beef and Miss Shadow Lovely Gang.
Hello.
Holy shit. We're probably not going to get to it in this episode, but Jesus Christ, they are swinging for the fences on this season. Holy smokes.
Oh, we haven't even begun. We're like, I would say, like, if this was an iceberg, we're seeing maybe 3% of the iceberg. You have no idea how bad it's going to get. It's going to get so bad.
It's so, I can't wait. I can't wait, but also I'm like dreading it because I forgot how miserable this episode is, and I kind of remembered it being miserable.
this episode is so stupid. There's so many times we're just like, well, okay, well then I guess everything can happen and nothing matters. Speaking of which, we should probably just get into it. We have some folks. Emily, who is the girl who was kidnapped for her quote unquote perfect genetics or whatever, is undressing in her room and the power goes out. She turns a candle on and then there's just like a bunch of snakes in her room.
Well, she hears the door creak open like a horror movie, but the door that opens is the closet, which is nothing for anyone ever. And there's like a snake in there because they really
like,
want to.
Is a hobbit gonna jump me?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck's gonna come out of a closet?
Like, I would just assume that it was an old ass closet because they make them dress like they're like old Victorian people. So I would just assume that it was an old ass closet and like the door just didn't fit right now. But no, like it opens and there's at this point one singular snake, which begs the question, how the fuck did the snake open the closet door? But they really want to emphasize this Adam and Eve metaphor with Timmy and Emily. And it's fucking excruciating every time that they do. Because they're like, get it? Like, even the Bible, she talked to a snake. That's something.
She didn't get attacked by snakes. Eve wasn't like hanging out in the Garden of Eden. And then like God was like, surprise, basket of snakes. And then like freaked her out or anything. That's not what happens. That's like the first fucking chapter. They should be able to read that far.
I promise to stop being like Johnny Apocalypse genius or whatever. But I also feel like this is a much bigger deal than like they make it out to be. Like when, you know what I mean? Like in a moment, like they're going to find out, hey, there's a snake in the outpost, which is like, so, is, you know, that means there's, like, a leak in here. That means animals can get in, like, from the outside where it's all radioactive and everything. But, like, you know, nobody seemed bothered by that part of it.
Yeah, in a second, Mead, who's played by Kathy Bates, is going to be like, oh, they must have burrowed really far underground to avoid the blast. I'm like, I don't think that's a thing. I don't think snakes yeah. go into the ground when they sense a nuclear bomb coming. Like, I don't think
they
that's
must
a thing
have their
they
own
do.
Outpost.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. They have
also,
their own,
like it's been what at this point? Like 8 months? Like a year? Like, then they still live
months,
in
right?
the ground? Like under the ground? Like, I don't think snakes
do
that.
These snakes are thriving, to be clear. Like, these are like healthy fucking snakes. These aren't like snakes on their death's door or something. Like, these MFers are plump and wiggling.
They're hanging out.
They're like mutants. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
there's something here, right? But they're just fucking like regular ass vanilla snakes.
Well,
are we in the apocalypse or not? Like, what are we doing?
Roughly 30 seconds from now on the episode, they're going to do something very interesting with the fake snakes in the TV show, which leads me to believe they had no budget to make mutant snakes in the TV show.
How could that be? They're on season
That's
eight.
What I'm like, saying. Every time something like this happens or like there's like bad graphics or something, I'm like, you guys were like, and I think still are, one of the most popular television shows in the United States of America. Like, where's your funding going if it's not to this?
Look, and And Pokemon's one of the most popular games in the world, and yet it still looks like shit. It's impossible to know.
I feel like Ryan Murphy, maybe from Glee, was like, okay, if we get the license for this music, then we have to, like, skip on other things. And maybe that's his thing. He's like, he's an okay writer, but he knows how to, like, squeeze a dime. And that's, like, why they
his
all
budgeting is great.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe it's right. The opposite. So. Maybe he's getting scammed. Maybe he's getting, like, positively scammed by these musical artists who are like, yeah, $8 million for the 30-second clip of our song that you play one time during this one episode.
Sounds fair.
Yeah, and he's like, that sounds good. Yeah, great. Put it in. Cool. Speaking of
these snakes.
The fucking fake snakes. So Emily screams because there's a snake, and Timothy and Mead, and I'm not joking, this character does not have a name in either the credits, nor the IMDb, nor the Amazon overlay. But character that does not have a name, who's played by the actress who plays Amazon Eve, and Mead and Timothy all come running into the room to find out why Emily screamed. They're like, what's going on? And Timothy and Emily are on the ground for some reason, with like so many snakes, just so many snakes, more snakes than you could possibly imagine.
It's like a lot of snakes. Yeah, like it's enough snakes that like it would not be good for. I just realized something they did later is foreshadowing, and I'm so fucking mad. Okay, you know, sorry, keep going.
Do you remember Pee-wee's Big Adventure where he had to save all the snakes? That's about how many snakes we're talking about here. But somehow they all got in the bunker, you know?
In this room, so. Specifically, to fuck with Emily, specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the snakes are flopping around everywhere, and Mead just goes, hell yeah, free snakes, and like cuts the head off yeah. one of them and is like, yum, 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 snake time for me. And everyone else in the room is like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And she's like, it's good meat. It tastes like chicken, but it's a little greasier. also, when they're scooping the snakes, Amazon Eve's character, who I swore the X-ray called her like fists or something.
God, I hope
anyway,
so. God, I hope so.
When she's handling the snakes, like one of them bites her hand a whole bunch and she doesn't react, which I'm now realizing is foreshadowing, which is fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a 1 second shot of it. Yeah, and like this is the point where Mead's like, they must have come in through the vents. And at this point, Emily and Timothy, who, in case it's not obvious, I fucking hate, and I think they're somehow two of the most boring characters that have ever been in American Horror Story, which is saying something. 100%. Like, every time they're on the screen, it is agonizingly boring, which is incredible for this show. Mm-hmm. Fascinating that they managed to do this. Maybe now we see why they only ever do legacy casting. And I don't even necessarily think it's like the actor's fault. It's just that their characters are so fucking boring.
He's just generic McGood guy, McFootball playing high school kid who recently got accepted to college. And like, he doesn't have any problems is the thing. Like, I need this fool to have a problem of some variety. Like, the world is very put upon him, but like, he doesn't have like an addiction or something, right? He doesn't have like anything going on. He's just like a nice guy. It sucks.
Remember how like Cabin in the Woods kind of like lampooned these like these horror archetypes? Like, Tim and Emily are like those characters, but like, unironically, like just completely serious. Like, nope, this is the hero person you're supposed to root for, and maybe a final girl that you're also supposed to like, but they're completely generic otherwise.
And they have to fuck. You have to know that they have to fuck. And not only that, they want to fuck. Like, that's usually the thing, right? Like, not to be weird or gross, but, like, that's the thing with, like, dystopian shit is, like, it's implied that we have to repopulate the Earth, whether we want to or not. These two are straight to, no, we want to. We just met each other, and we for sure want to. Yeah, we're really into it.
And not to be, like, crazy, like, with realism or whatever, but, like, also, you're not getting your, like, full caloric intake. You're probably tired all the friggin' time, you know what I mean? So it's, like, your libido's still going, even if you're young. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. Like, I feel like it's just kind of like, you know what? Like, maybe we want two kisses a week. That's about, you know, I don't know.
It's
like,
because they
candy on Christmas, like, but that's the best you're getting.
They so desperately wanted this, like, double-edged sword metaphor of, like, the forbidden fruit of, which is actually sex and not a fruit. It's a metaphor. But, like, that doesn't make sense for their characters, which were saved from devastation and the entire world ending, specifically so that at some point they would fucking repopulate the Earth. They wanted to also have their cake and eat it too, question mark, by having a, oh, but it's also like a Romeo and Juliet situation where they're not supposed to want to fuck and they need to specifically not fuck or else they'll die. And it's like, well, you can't have, like, both of those conflicts. Those conflicts are directly, like, they opposite to one another.
You can't have any of it. Like, if you want to be serious, too, like, they were, like, chosen specifically, so, like, you can't antagonize them. You know what I mean? Like, you're supposed to be like, hey, you're supposed to be like, you know, we're really happy you're here. We need you. We freaking spared you from the apocalypse, but, you know, whatever.
It's to the point that you would assume if, like, someone from higher up in the organization found out that for some reason one of the people they had hired is keeping them from having sex under any circumstances, that you would not, like, have a little conversation with them. You would kill them, throw them outside, and then say, sorry about that, kids, as you were.
Yeah, like, you know? Go to the bone zone. In fact, we have special parts of the facility for this exact activity. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that might be relevant later. Who could say? So Mead's like, yummy, it's snake time. And, like, honestly, it, like, they play it like she's fucking crazy. If I had been not eating food for 3 to 6 months and eating one half of a nutrient cube a day, and someone was like, we have snake meat, I'd be like, fuck yeah, we do. Fuck yeah, we got snake meat. Like, these people are not as excited as they should be about the snake meat.
Yeah.
I don't even need to be in the apocalypse. I'll just be at the state fair. And they'll be like, you want some snake nuggets? And I'll be like, yeah, buddy. Absolutely.
I bought snake whiskey in goddamn, like, Thailand. And it was like, just like, hey, look, it's a bottle of whiskey and there's a snake in it. It's fucking disgusting. But it's like, you know what? I'll try it. What the hell?
Yeah, that
right?
sounds pretty
yeah,
sick.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
It's really quite bad.
But these people are, like, not, I don't know, nobody besides Mead seems hype as hell about the snakes, and I think that they should be, but oh well. So now it's dinner time, and we are serving the snakes for everybody to eat in the fancy dinner room. These motherfuckers.
Before Liz talks about what happens next, I need to emphasize what she's about to describe was, like, front and center and framed as the focal point of the shot. This is not some little background element that, like, Liz is nitpicking or whatever. No, no, no. This is, like, you can't not notice this.
It's in three shots. I want to be clear. It's in three separate shots that are broken up amongst the next 2 minutes of TV. So the first thing we see is, like, the unveiling of it, and the camera is up in there. It is the only thing in the shot is the snake soup. And you might be thinking, oh, what? Did they just make, like, a generic stew and you can't tell it's snake or whatever? No, I wouldn't be complaining about that. That would be fucking stupid. You know what they did? They took a bunch of rubber movie prop snakes, like the kind you would throw in your yard to scare away birds or gophers, and they just cut those up with, I assume, a knife. And then just tossed the chunks of it into a liquid of some variety.
So it's just like flat white chunks. Like, there's no texturing or anything. It's just like white rubber.
In Metal Gear Solid, and I mean, look at the original version, when Snake bites into a snake or whatever, it looks so much better than this. You know what I mean? Like, this real fucking thing can't compete with a PlayStation 2-ass game in terms of snake eating snake realism.
Yeah,
it's remarkable how bad this is.
It looks akin to, like, if you've ever eaten like crab sticks with a K, like the fake crab sticks, where it's just a solid white tube but with, like, a color on the outside. It's that, but they have put snake scales on the outside, which is how you can tell it's a snake prop that they have cut up into chunks. And I'm like, the implication is that snakes are one solid tube. No bones, no flesh, no internal organs, no blood, just a solid fucking white tube.
They could have just made shredded chicken soup and no one would have questioned it. It would have been fine.
They could have used imitation crab for how bad this is. You know what I mean? Like, I'd be like, oh, I guess snake might look like that. Just like, get the hell out of here.
He could have just had chunks.
A platter of tteokbokki and it would look more accurate. It's fucked.
Quite literally, they could have put chunks of literally anything in there, and I don't think anybody would have given a shit. But they were like, how is it going to be obvious to the people who are eating it that it's snake meat? Well, it's got to look like snake meat. And I'm like, even if this was the snake meat, for whatever reason, snakes are solid white tubes like string cheeses now. I don't know why, but that's the universe we're living in. You still don't eat the scales part. The scales part isn't edible. So why did you leave that on the white tube meat? It's whoever's cooking in this. Now I know why they're eating nutrient cubes, because whoever is cooking the food here, dog shit at it. Absolutely ass cheeks.
They left goddamn Stu's thumb bone in the stew. I mean, this is like, I guess it's part of the
tooth.
Course, right?
I don't even know why they would have had the tooth. Like, what part of stew were you putting in the soup that required you to get his, like, jawbone in there? I was fucking wheezing when this scene happened. I'm like, there's no way they chopped up just a rubber fucking snake and put this shit in a goddamn soup and said that that's snake soup. I was losing it. Yeah. But now everybody has to dress extra fancy. They're already dressing fancy, but now they're dressing like fancier, I assume, because they have company, because that guy is here now, but it never really like addresses that. I assume Venable told them to like be on their best little lad and little lass behavior. But like everybody has their hair up like Hunger Games style, like Hunger Games, one of the people at the Capitol style, and they're all being very weird, which is not something you'd think people who have been starving for the last 6 months would feel up to doing.
Right.
But maybe they get punished for it. Who could say? And then Coco, who has acknowledged the soup is snake meat, is like, hey, I don't eat things that have no legs or too many legs. And I'm like, that actually is quite a few things that you probably do eat that you think don't fit into your category. A lot of things don't have legs. You know what doesn't have legs? Fucking fish. Fish don't have legs. Yeah. That's like a lot of, and you know what has too many legs? Crabs, lobster. Those things have too many legs. So like, what are we talking about here?
I would even go as far as to say that the snarky retort then comes from across the table where Andre goes, well, you didn't have a problem eating something with two legs, like referencing them eating stew. But like two legs actually does fall under too few legs, I think, because I'm assuming the baseline is four in this case. But, so like, everybody's out of order.
But also, why is he mad at her for eating stew? Like, she didn't choose that, you know?
And he's like, been mad this whole time. Like, and that's my thing, too. It's like, even back in the other episode, I'm like, why are you mad at the other people for accidentally eating stew? Allegedly it happened.
Yeah.
Instead of mad at the people who fed you a person. Like, what are you...
Yeah.
What do you expect? I guess it's because he assumed some of them knew it was people meat and, like, still ate it anyway, which is like, okay, you get, like, a little bit of a side eye. If like
Evie, maybe, yeah, right? She was just like, yeah, whatever, when she found out. But like Coco, I think, was also grossed out, or would have been in character, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Oh, she yelled for her assistant to come put her finger down her throat.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, but either way, that's the interaction there, and then Dinah and Evie, the two older ladies at the table, start talking about something, and it is so fucking boring, I did not bother writing down what it was, because I promise you, it has nothing to do with the story.
Yeah, it's a total throwaway thing, I think.
It's usually anecdotal stuff.
It's about knowing famous people.
It's usually just Evie talking about, like, back in my day, I knew... Frank Sinatra, like
Richard, Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack, and they used to call me the voice back in the day. They said they should call you the voice.
It's a total non sequitur. That's right, because it's just like it has nothing to do with anything, and then they just move on. Like everyone ignores it. Like anyway, yeah. This is like not the only time that happens in this.
No,
episode,
every
too,
time
but...
Evie talks, it's basically that. Like it's just something where I just tune out immediately because I'm like, I know this shit isn't gonna have any meaning to anything, not even like character building. It's just going to be, we can reference a thing that happened in the 1960s. And Ty and I are both doing like an old lady voice for this. She doesn't talk like an old lady. She talks like Liza Minnelli. But I don't want to do a Liza Minnelli like impersonation this whole time. So I'm going to make her sound like an old lady. Because she is, and she's annoying, and every time she talks, it's boring. That's the thing, is like, I'm afraid, I think Beef is prepared. I don't think Ty's ready for how this season's gonna go from, God, these episodes are excruciatingly boring, to, holy fuck, what's happening? I'm so overstimulated. What's going on? I feel like I just watched 9 movies in a row, but like not in a good way, not in a good positive way.
Like my eyes were being held open like in Clockwork Orange and I was being forced to ingest 9 movies at the same time. Yeah,
it's exactly that. But this episode in particular has so, it's a short episode too. It's only like 40 minutes long, but there are so many chunks where it's just like nothing. I'm like, I don't fucking care. This is episode 2. You shouldn't be having chunks of the episode where I'm like, I don't fucking care. Because like that's like season, like not, I'm talking non-anthology. I'm talking like Supernatural, like one continuity shows. Season 8, episode 8 type shit. Like, not anthology, so effectively just episode 2 period type shit, if you know what I mean. Just every time Evie or Dinah, anytime Dinah or Evie talk, frankly, any of the characters that talk, it's just fucking boring.
They're all very nothing characters, and not that the show was ever great with characters, but like this feels like real bottom of the barrel. Like
one of them is literally just like, "Hey, you're basically Oprah, but not Oprah, right?" And she's like, "Yep, I'm Oprah at home." That's her whole fucking character. That's it.
Yeah, I'm Oprah. You ordered on Temu.
Or Mr. Galant, who can't even be bothered for a fucking, like, first name.
He has a first name. I got so fucking sick of writing Mr. Galant in my fucking notes that I had to Google what this motherfucker's first name is because they will not fucking say it in the TV show for some reason. And it's Malcolm, which fucking sucks, but it's at least a name. So I refer to him as Malcolm in my notes. And if you hear me say Malcolm, that's Mr. Galant, because I'm not fucking saying Mr. Galant every time I see this bitch on my screen. I hate it so much.
Which would be a lot. Yeah.
So speaking of things they'll talk about and then immediately it's pointless. Emily asked the Venable,
that was kind of tough as shit. Just call her the Venable. That's good, actually. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Venable, who arrived when the alarms went off? Because, like, the alarms went off and she went, oh, fuck, someone's here. And then just, like, didn't follow up on that. So everybody's like, yeah, what was that? And she goes, you'll know in due time. Which is, like, next scene, by the way. So this is, like, pointless that they have her be like, you'll never know. Because it literally cuts to Michael Langdon walking in the room and him being like, it was me, Michael Langdon.
That's, like, an actual, like, Halloween Simpsons bit almost. Like, you'll know in due time. Which is right now. You know what I mean? Like, you absolutely see that. Like...
But they all go to remove their cloches from their respective snake stews. And... oh my god, the snakes are alive again? And, like, nobody follows up on this for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, no one will mention it again. I think the thing is, every so often, the two most boring characters in the universe, who I have dubbed the teens, will just say, like, literally 5 seconds of dialogue that's like, oh yeah, we remember the plot of this show. Where, like, they'll have Timothy open the scene like, well, the snakes became real again. What was that? And then Emily will be like, yeah, that was crazy. And then they will not talk about it anymore.
No, it's literally, it's basically like they open a scene and it's like, I can't believe one of the snakes is alive again. And then, or he'll say, and then she was like, I don't even want to think about it. And then they just change subjects.
He's very respectful, but also like on the spectrum. So he takes everything extremely literally. And he's like, okay, well, she doesn't want to talk about it, I guess. We're never talking about the snakes that came magically back to life.
Right.
And literally, I'm not joking, there's probably 6 or 7 scenes in this episode where that happens, where like something like quote unquote big plot wise will happen, and instead of any of the characters in the scene addressing it, it will cut to these two in a secret space where it's just the two of them at like talking about what just happened to the extent of 2 sentences, and then they move on with whatever the fuck those two are getting up to.
Actually, it's funny because after the snakes, do the little jump scare, they're, one of them's alive or whatever, then we get the intro of the show, and then it actually does go to the scene where Tim and Emily are like, "Can you believe these snakes?" Yeah, anyway, and like they start talking about, "Listen, I have a plan. Let's just take some food and just leave into the radioactive wasteland to take our chances." That's Emily's idea, and Tim's like, "Yeah, I don't know. How about we break into Venable's room? Sounds good." And then they pan out to Mead seemingly overhearing on them, but that's not followed up on, so...
It's just that her presence is very threatening, so they feel the need to leave, which is, like, honestly fair. It's so funny, because when it pans to Mead, and, like, it's like, uh-oh, they got caught, all I could think of in that scene is they beat the hell out of Kathy Bates's face. And I don't mean like physical violence. I mean like they gave her a full face beat. Like I'm talking like 2012, like the brows that everybody was doing, Anastasia dip brow pomade, a full like matte lipstick, like heavy like smoky eye makeup. And like if you're for some reason one of like maybe the 7 people on earth who don't know who Kathy Bates is, I maybe not painting you a picture that's very disconcerting, but if you are one of the rest of the people in the entire world, and you do know who Kathy Bates is, imagining Kathy Bates with a buzz cut and then what appears to be a Snapchat filter on her face. It's jarring. So it is so bizarre.
It's so funny. It's like, for me, it's like if someone tried to make my mom, like, really threatening for a TV show.
Or like an Instagram daddy.
Doesn't fly. I'm like, that's my mom. Like, nice try. You can't sell me my mom as a serial killer. Grow up.
To me, it looks like they grabbed, like, what is supposed to be the caricature of, like, a 55 to 60-year-old Midwestern lady with, like, short hair, who was put...
My mom, yeah.
Yeah. Put on a TV show where, like, the contestants have to like do drag on them essentially, like, or like practice their makeup skills on them, and like it doesn't really matter who they're doing it on, they're just going to do the same makeup regardless, and this person just so happened to choose a full Instagram baddie look for Kathy Bates for some reason. It is truly a haunting clash in aesthetics. But she's like, "I'm here." And then they're like, "We got to go to the library. Goodbye." And then they do. And now we're in the library having a meeting, ? And Michael Langdon walks in looking like Lestat from Interview with the Vampire, which is kind of like his whole deal, is looking like Lestat from Interview with the Vampire. And then he just kind of walks down Venable and glares at her until she eventually is like, "Oh, my bad. Yeah, go ahead. Talk to the people. I'm not in charge, actually." And he's like, "My name is Langdon." And I'm like, fucked up. Because if I was in that audience, I would think that was your first name. Because you didn't say, like, Mr. Langdon. You just said fucking Langdon, which could, like, in theory be a first name. It'd be a fucked up first name, but it could be a first name.
And, like, I get that. I went by my last name for a really long time, so I would just introduce myself as my last name. But mine is, like, so far away from a first name that, like, as soon as someone heard I didn't have, like, a crazy fucking accent, they'd be like, "Oh, that's his last name." Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, Langdon is, like, that could just be, like, an English guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, or, like, a Gen Z.
Also, by the way, like, the other characters are like, "We're home of Venable." So, yeah, why could it be a first goddamn name?
Yeah. It's I, Wilhelmina Venable. Okay, whatever, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
Comparatively, like, mine is like John Smith. Like, yeah, absolutely, so.
Yeah, but, like, it's weird because he doesn't even, like, seem like the kind of guy who would go by his last name, because he's, like, a little chaos gremlin. This is where I'm going to lose both of you, I'm sure. He was unfortunately the only thing I kind of liked about this season when I did punish myself by making me watch it, like, organically. And it's not because he's, like, a good character or anything. It's because he's a little fucking chaos gremlin like Winter from Cult, where, like, he was just getting up to some shit all the time. He's such a little shithead, and he's constantly getting up to some shenanigans, and... That was, like, the only thing that broke up the fucking monotony of every episode.
I think the only thing, like, with him, though, is, like, I think you're right that they make him look like Lestat, and they make him kind of act like that, where he's supposed to be, like, kind of in charge and maybe seducing people. But, like, he comes across more like Marvel's Loki, where he's just kind of funny and weird, you know?
Don't,
like,
you dare talk about my beautiful boy that way.
I
was like, wow, you just, like, put a laser target reticle right on Liz's fucking head. Shot. That's
how dare you compare my beautiful boy.
I agree. They should give Langdon more bulge in every scene.
Oh, I have terrible, terrible news. No, I actually, ironically, not even joking, I think that Slow Beef is actually, like, right on the money of, like, I just recently rewatched Interview with the Vampire, and, like, all I could think is, this man's a menace. Every time Lestat's on the screen, it's like, this man's a fucking menace. Like, every time he interacts with any person, it's the most insane bullshit anyone's ever seen in their entire life. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of, I think, what they're going for here with old Langdon. Like, every single conversation he has, the way that he ends conversations, we'll get there. But, like, he's just fully, like, he's got, like, dare I say, like, trickster energy of, like, maybe he's just a little guy, like a little creature who's, like, here to just mess with you, and that's why he's here. Yeah. It's
a little birthday apocalypse judge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only problem, and we'll get to it later, is that it does seem like a lot of what he's quote unquote doing is not him doing it, and it's just he's accidentally nearby when things happen and people make assumptions, which is, like,
it is very
weird.
Funny. It is very funny that he's just like, and I'm here too. And it's not even like an ominous thing. It's just like, oh no, he does just actually happen to also be there. I love that for him.
So there's a meeting. He introduces himself and he basically says, like, hey, I'm here and I'm the most important guy. And if I don't show up, it's over. By the way, the other three compounds, which he names three locations, but, like, that's crazy that that's such a small amount of compounds. Well, regardless.
Yeah.
He says they've all been overrun, which, yeah, don't know why San Angelo was on the
San
list.
Angelo,
San
Texas.
Angelo, Texas.
Syracuse, New York, West Virginia.
Beckley, West Virginia.
Like, two on the East Coast like that. Like, all right, you know, but sure.
Also, West Virginia. Because, you know, like, I was thinking about it. I was giving it a good long thing, which I know the writers didn't do. And I was like, okay, Syracuse, like, kind of makes sense because it's, like, pretty close to, like, a lot of hubs. Like, there's a lot of people, and it's easier to get to for the rich people who are probably living in, like, New York City or whatever. I've been to both Beckley, West Virginia, and San Angelo, Texas. Some of you who have not been to Texas might be thinking, oh, San Angelo, like the place with the Riverwalk and the Alamo, that's San Antonio. That would make more sense. It wouldn't make, like, sense, but it would make more sense.
More sense, right.
It's like a name you would expect to see on a map before you zoomed in too close, right?
It's like, there's stuff there, but, like, not notable stuff there. Beckley, West Virginia being the same way, where, like,
yeah,
that's like someone's, like, college town.
Like, when you were playing, when they say that, you'd say, like, you mean Virginia? Like, no, West Virginia. You're like, yeah? Like, West? All right. And then, like, and the other six international ones. Like, so there's three in America and then just six for the rest of the world?
Yeah.
Yeah?
This is what it's like whenever, like, somewhere announces fighting game tournaments. It's either, like, there's four in Japan, three in America, and one in Europe. And you're just like, damn, Europe, get fucked. Like, this is truly for the whole world. It's like, yeah, we got four of them here in the States, and then, I don't know, like, one in Korea.
One of them's clearly not in Hong Kong because Coco's family was in Hong Kong and they were shit out of luck, so
Which, yeah. That's crazy, because right? There's, like, a lot of people in China. There's, like, a lot of people in China.
Yeah. In case you're wondering, they also don't say what the international ones were, so we're just supposed to... You know what it was? And I guarantee that this is probably the case. They probably were like, one per other continent, ? And then, like, didn't follow up at all. They're like, no need to look to see like how many like big cultural epicenters they are. Just assign like, I don't know, one per continent. We can probably spare that many. That sounds right, right? Like, don't Google it or nothing, but that sounds right, probably.
The wildest part too then is like, because he's like, but there's another compound I can take you to, or some of you to, called the Sanctuary, because it has defenses that won't let them get overrun. And then they ask the question that everyone would be, which is, well, why didn't you make all the places like that? And he goes like, well, that'll be answered in due time. And then moves that, right.
That's top secret.
Oh, that's it. Secret? It's classified. That's right. From who? Like, what the?
Bro, it is the end of the earth. Classification time is over.
There's like three people who get to know about that, literally. Like, get the fuck out.
Maybe even less if I'm in a particularly bad mood.
Right.
Yeah. It's there's going to be, unfortunately, a lot of that. Which is the kind of thing that, like, is... Like, I'm not going to say it's, like, fine, but, like, it's okay to do to characters in the universe, but, like... Then you gotta give, like, the viewers, like, some breadcrumbs so that we're not also being classified out of information that we're not allowed to know. We're the audience. We're watching this for fun. We should be a little bit in on the information, like, even just, like, a smidgen. Like, you don't gotta keep it secret from us.
I feel like, too, like, none of it, there's not enough threads where you're kind of like, oh, I wonder where that's going. Like, it just feels like... You already know it's not going anywhere. They're just saying to you, like, it's not important. Don't worry. You know what I mean? Like, there's no point in fixing the mystery.
It would be so much more interesting if there was just, like, a five-frame flash of, like, a witch casting a spell or of a laser turret going off or just something, just inkling to something mysterious, and then have him say, like, I can't tell you that. You know, like, give the audience a little, like, what's that? And then, that would be so much better. But alas, poor Yorick, they did nothing instead. They just had him go, I'm not telling any of you anything.
It's not important. What's more important is that I'm going to be giving you all an interview to decide who can come. And this interview, we call it cooperating. Go fuck yourself, American Horror Story, for that line. Like, I swear to God, like, awful. Why? What doesn't even make sense?
I even have,
like,
parentheses, fuck you, in the notes. After cooperating.
Yep, there you are. Yep. I was going off memory and then I look over and yep.
He's like the co-op wants us to use a method. Later he's gonna say something else that's like akin to that, but like not using like jargon, where he's gonna be like, the co-op has methods of doing that. I'm like, yeah, man, we've always done that for forever. The co-op didn't come up with that. What are you fucking talking about?
The co-op who invented job interviews,
right?
I guess
they're like some cutesy office talk, like cooperating. You know, like, it's because it's our name, like how Hulu calls their employees hooligans. But you know,
ew, I didn't know that.
Do they really?
They really do. That's a thing.
That
horrible.
Sucks, man.
Horrible. I'd quit. Damn. I'd quit.
Yeah.
You couldn't pay me enough.
What'd you call me? Nah, I don't think I will. You can keep your co-slopperating or whatever you're doing over there yourself. I'm fucking out.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, so Langdon then just goes, yeah, I gotta cooperate and you all have to tell me all of your secrets. And then Coco just says, what is this, the Hunger Games? And it's like a nuke went off. Like, no, like, it was nukes. You were there. It was nukes. It wasn't the Hunger Games. The Hunger Games wasn't nukes went off.
Also, the metaphor doesn't work. It's more like Survivor or like America's Got Talent or something. Like, you're not going to fight each other. Like, that's the thing with Hunger Games. Like, it's a battle royale scenario, which this is not, you know, but.
Yeah, honestly, you're in a better situation than Hunger Games. I can say, as a person whose like hyperfixation was the Hunger Games for like 5 years, you're way better off, like, in the Hunger Games than where you're at, like, now. Like, that wouldn't be a downgrade if this was the Hunger Games.
What frustrates me about it is that this is also, like, American Horror Story's little, like, we know pop culture moment, but it's like, no, you don't, because that's not the Hunger Games. That's not good. I know what you're trying to say, and you're fucking it up, you know? But that's just me.
They should have genuinely said, is this America's Got Talent? This is just like the end of Citizens
Kane.
Citizens Kane?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is just like the end of Citizens Kane. And then, like, everyone in the room turns and looks and is like, huh? Are you sure you know that?
That did just Jimmy Neutron brain blast me when we were talking, like, a few minutes ago, though, about how, like, the characters are so, like, agonizingly boring. Something that I was gonna say is, it's dire when, like, the character that's supposed to be played as, like, the annoying influencer, like, billionaire, is the most interesting person in the room talking.
When
I'm excited for Coco to be talking, that's bad. We are in a dire, dire situation. If I'm like, yeah, let the billionaire influencer airhead talk more. That's good.
That's good. These characters are like the little protein cubes. Like, you don't get enough of them, so it's like, oh boy, snake, I'm all in, because what else are you going to eat, right? So.
Oh, do you think it was a metaphor? Do you think they want us to feel that way?
No, I definitely do not think it was a metaphor. After they fucked up the is it just like the Hunger Games? I don't think so.
True, you got me there. Yeah, so it's not like the Hunger Games, if anyone was curious.
Yeah, and Coco yells like, oh, I bought my way here. What do you mean I need to go through a second round of interviews? Which, like, honestly, yeah, fair. She paid for her service. And so then he goes, well, you cannot co-slopperate if you don't want to, but then you'll die. You'll die here. The cannibals will come. Here's some pills I have that'll let you kill yourself before the feral cannibals get you. To which, like, I would raise my hand in the back and be like, wait, is it not cool to be a feral cannibal? Have we tried? Is it maybe tight doing that? Like,
I would then follow.
Maybe the feral cannibals have some cool points.
I would raise my hand after you and be like, follow-up question. Can we get, like, a little bit more information about the alleged feral radioactive cannibals that live outside of our bunker? Like, maybe even, like, because those seem like at some point they might be an issue, whether when it's in, we're in transit or, like, if they figure out how to get in here. I assume there's still people, so they probably know how a door works.
You ate stew. You're all just domesticated cannibals. Yeah. Like, it's not that much better, frankly. And so,
this is the plot of Warrior Cats. This is the same conflict that happens in the Warrior Cats books. The house cats versus the outside cats. It's the same thing.
Me raising my hand again. Do the cannibals speak English? Are they hot?
Are they single?
Let's start just being like, enough of this guy.
We can only make 9 of these. Do you think we should defend it from people overrunning it? Nah, just one maybe. You know, like a special one. Who's going to overrun a sanctuary in the apocalypse? Come on, stupid.
It's a social experiment. We just leave a bunch of people defenseless and they die. What's the experiment, huh?
Well, I think they say something to that effect, like, in the last episode, like, where they're like, yeah, we're kind of fucking around with the other ones, but, like, we got, like, a serious bunker that you can go to. These are our fuck around bunkers, and you can go to the cool bunker that's for real survival if you're like good at like tap dancing or whatever makes me decide to let you in. Yeah.
Our shit void comp, except way less interesting. Malcolm, let's just call him.
Fucking Malcolm.
Like, I'll go first. Yeah. And I think somebody gives him shit for it, like Coco or something, right? And then
a little bit. She's kind of like, oh, nice job volunteering to be first. And then Evie says something to the along the lines of like, an actor once told me that if you're not first, you're last. And I'm like, that sounds like something a race car driver would say, or maybe Lightning McQueen from the movie Cars.
I thought she said like, if you either want to be first or last.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Which I guess is like you want to make sure you either have the best opening impression or leave the best impression on the way out. But like, I like your idea better, Liz. I like that she's like Lightning McQueen core and is like, that's right. If you're not going first, you're fucking up.
Extremely Lightning McQueen energy.
Like, everybody else does the proper reaction to Evie. It's like, all right, so anyway. And they just move on, you know?
Like, Evie straightening her Lightning McQueen biggest fan hat. Like, these people don't understand me.
So Venable and Langston and everybody just like waltz out and leave the you know, the survivors, quote unquote, to just kind of like hang out and talk amongst themselves. And they immediately start bitching and, you know, complaining about who's going to make it, who won't. This is bullshit. And, you know, I think Coco just straight up is just like, Evie, they're not going to pick you. You're old as shit. And Evie's like, I'm 52, which is like the bit of her lying about her age still, even in this time. The thing is, I think Evie could have been played as like a funny character, but she just sucks.
Yeah, they made Evie like the kind, if you work in like any kind of service industry, the kind of woman you dread interacting with, because they're just gonna be the fucking worst. Whereas she could have been like, somebody's Nana's on the loose and we gotta wrangle her in, because who knows what kind of shenanigans she's gonna get up to. She could have gotten up to some real like fun little adventures, but instead she's just fucking awful.
She had to be either Sophia from the Golden Girls or nothing. Like, not in this. That's the only way this character works for me. I'm sorry. Either
I think it's either got to be all in Liza Minnelli to the point that it's the character was actually played by Liza Minnelli, or Mr. Magoo. I think Mr. Magoo could be pretty cool,
can
too.
Can you imagine?
Just, like, stumbling through the bunker, almost getting bit by a snake.
I kind of wish they would have done that. If they would have done something like they did with Coven, where like they're like, yeah, this is our fake Oprah Dinah, this is Evie, she was like married to a famous like movie producer guy or whatever, this is Coco whatever, she's a billionaire's kid, and this is just Matthew McConaughey, the real life man Matthew McConaughey. Like, I wish they would have done that like they did with Stevie Nicks in Coven, where they're like, yeah, we got Cordelia, we got Violet and Scarlet and Pokemon X and Y, and then we got Stevie Nicks, the real woman, Stevie Nicks, from such shows as Real Life, parentheses, Outside. I wish they would have done that in this. God, I wish they would have done that in this season. But they don't. They're like, these are a bunch of fake people we made up that aren't cool or interesting. It would have been incredibly meta if they just made the people like the cast of American Horror Story. Like, this is the cast of American Horror Story. But they're in an apocalypse now. The character they're playing is just themselves. It's just all cameos all the way down. I shouldn't.
And then also Matthew and McConaughey, also yeah, right, yeah, being like, all right, yeah, having a cool time.
God, but lest I give them ideas, I guess we will move on, because it's fucking cooperating time, which is, again, just a funny way of saying job interviews, basically. And of course, because Malcolm, which is Gallant's first name, evidently, he volunteered, so he's first. And I want to say, like, Bart, when we're talking about him specifically, I want you to know that the show simultaneously wants him to be a gay stereotype and also doesn't want you to know that he's gay. Like, they're trying to, like, do both of those things at the same time, in a way that makes the character very confusing. It just does not play, because I think they really wanted to be like, oh, he's going to be the really flamboyant hairdresser, and like he has the very flamboyant grandma, and like when we learn about him, when he's about to talk to Michael Langdon, like he's going to describe what kind, quote unquote, what kind of gay he was, and it's going to be kind of like the outlandish stereotype, like the caricature, and then, but that's just not who that guy is. That's just not who he is in this show.
Let me tell you how, like, Mr. Gay they try to make. So the interview starts, right? And Langdon does this whole, like, revolver ocelot thing of, like almost winking to the camera, like, you can't lie to me, you can't trick me, I'm just gonna know everything. We're not even gonna go into how that's true, but whatever. And then he's like, you know,
oh, no, if you use auto fire.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to unplug your controller to talk to me. Is that how that game worked? I thought I read that somewhere.
I think, yeah. It's
yeah, you got it. Yeah.
So, like, but the thing is, then, this is how, like, Mr. Gay is. He's like, listen, if you need me to procreate, I've had sex with a woman before, you know. I think she finished, but it's easier to tell with guys. Like, why are you including these details? Like, I'm pretty sure he knows, like, how it all works. Like, tell me more about this. This cooperating is more interesting than I thought. Like, what
well,
the fuck?
And this would be, like, almost a borderline, like, funny answer. Because, like, I could imagine that if I was him in that scenario and I was, like, a gay man, my first thing would be like, okay, listen. I know you probably want people who want to have, like, heterosexual relations in order to procreate in your facility. And I'm not usually into that, but like I can be if you need me to.
Right.
Like that's the thing. But the thing is, he's answering specifically the question, "What is your sexual orientation?" Which is a fucking insane question to start with. I think that's I know that the world is like gone, but I think that that breaks like several laws. I think asking. and so it's crazy that he opens with that as, "What is your sexual orientation?"
I feel like the more important question is just sort of like, are you fertile? Like, can you give a donation? Because there's like, you know, there's gay sperm donors. Like, you'd be fine, right? Like, in this scenario. Like, you don't need, like, vaginal penetration in this, like, presumably. Like, I'm sure they have.
Dude's been jerking off for ages. Yeah
exactly.
Since time immemorial.
Good to know, right, Malcolm. Yeah. But Malcolm's just letting him know he's down if they do need that part. Like, if they do need that part, he's like, listen, I've done it before. I can tag in. So, if the need is there, I can tag in. Which is when fucking Michael Langdon says another extremely, like, what the fuck are we talking about thing, where he's like, the co-op already has techniques for harvesting genetic material, but we do still need a female womb to incubate the baby. And I'm like, man, people have been jerking off into cups to artificially, like, inseminate other people for a long time, I imagine. Like, we've had, like, fertility treatments for a while and sperm donors for a while.
But it sounds like he's even saying, like, we don't even need sperm. You know what I mean? Like, we don't need sperms or eggs. We just need, like, a womb to handle it, which is, like, that's odd. And then he says, like, we need, like, a womb, like, for now, anyway. Like, until we fix that part, which is, like, well, then, what do you need any of them for, I guess, really? And, like, why are we even bothering with, like, any of the guys? But, what, you know, okay.
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, exactly. So, So then he's like, what does he say? Like, tell me about your anger, I think is how it starts, right? And he's like, I hate my grandma. And I'll tell you why. Because I wanted to live the freewheeling lifestyle of a gay man, but she wanted me to be a prim and proper kind of gay person she could parade around and do her Hollywood friends, and I refused. And then we cut to it, like, she tried to set him up with some suitors or whatever, and he walks in, like, very, I don't know how to say it, like, flamboyantly dressed, almost, like, stereotypically gay.
He's dressed like one of the village
like,
people.
Dude, he's, like, full-on village
people. Yeah, he's dressed
people,
like one of the village
yeah,
people. Yeah,
he's
let's
like,
call him what
on,
it is.
Like, leather.
Right.
Yeah. Like, he's full in it, and he comes out with a jukebox, and yeah, so it's his mom or his grandma had set up a bunch of fellas from the area who seemed like kind enough guys, but they were clearly here to try and like get the inheritance money, at least according to Gallant.
Yeah.
And so he walks out with a boombox and is just trying to be as like over the top and ridiculous as possible. Puts on, and this is like a really, this is more of just like a, well, why would you do it that way move, where he puts on a gas mask and then like takes a tube out of the gas mask and like puts it in the soup and like breathes soup.
Yeah, you're missing the best part of this sequence, which is where he is dancing to the boombox dressed as one of the village people, and it looks like a costume, to be clear. Like, it's a costume. He's not like just dressed and happens to look like one of the village people. He's very clearly wearing like a fake mustache and like aviator sunglasses inside. And then he starts playing the boombox very loudly at the table. And then he looks down. He first pulls out the gas mask. And in case you're like in your mind envisioning like the kind of mask you use for painting, wrong. Like the one that like goes over your face.
Military grade canister.
Yeah, that like covers your face and has like goggles and stuff. Like, it's not like the kind that only goes over your nose and mouth. Not that that would make more sense for what's about to happen.
There's like an infamous Marilyn Manson, I don't know if it's a photo or an album cover, where he's wearing a gas mask hooked up to some dude's crotch, right? It's supposed to be like overtly sexual and a little like, whoa, what the heck kind of thing. this dude's doing that with bisque.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, a thick soup. Like, it's like you're just really hungry, I guess? Like, what is the message here?
Yeah, because what happens is after he puts the fucking boombox on the table, he, like, he pulls out the gas mask, then he looks down, sees the soup, and is like, is that bisque? I freaking love bisque. He says those words verbatim. I didn't make that up. And then he puts the mask on, and, like, everyone has to sit. It reads like a fucking I think you should leave skit, because he has to spend, like, 2 to 3 seconds setting up the tube, and he's like pulling the tube out, and everyone's just watching him do it in complete silence because the boombox is off now. And then he puts the tube into the bisque and starts sucking, and I'm like, it's not a straw. You're either gonna asphyxiate on bisque, or it's just gonna be like splattering inside of your mask, which if that's that fucking sucks, brother. I don't know why you would do that, even to own somebody else. Like, that fucking
sucks.
That
mask is tomato flavored forever. Yeah, you can't. There's no amount of dishwasher that's going to get that shit out of there. Yeah.
Either that or, like I said, he's going to die because his mask is going to full of bisque and he's not going to be able to breathe because it's a sealed mask and it's on his face. And it's like, okay, well, what? And of course, Evie, like, didn't love that, which, like, yeah, like... that's fucking weird. That would be fucking weird regardless. Also, he makes the point to be like, all of these guys wanted her inheritance money, but little did they know she donated it to a cat charity in her will. I'm like, are we ripping off the Aristocats? Like, what a pull, American Horror Story. Like, listen, I love the Aristocats as much as anybody. It's like my favorite, like, classic animated Disney movie, but like, like, that's not, like, a good plot for, like, other stuff. You can't just be like, yeah, the weird, conceited, old, rich lady is giving all of her money to cat charity. I'm like, billionaires don't fucking give their money to cat charities when they die. The Aristocats was not based on a true story. Like, relax. I hate Evie so much. God, I fucking hate Evie. But then, like, that's when Langdon's like, does that mean you like leather? Which, by the way, he says something, Langdon says something to the effect of when Malcolm is like, she wanted me to be the perfect gay and I wanted to be more rebellious and whatever. And he's like, is that a crime or a sin? I don't even remember exactly how he says it. And then Langdon's like, funny you should ask. And then he walks out from behind the desk and, like, sits on the desk next to him all, like, chaotic bisexual style and is like, I don't believe in God. Why would God do the apocalypse? And by extension, I don't believe in sin or rules anymore. It's almost like I'm a funny little trickster god or something. That's crazy. Anyway, do you like leather? And
it's, I know, yeah. It's such a non sequitur. It has nothing to do. And then he's like, yeah, I don't believe in God. Well, anyway.
Yeah, he's like, so here's a small little tangent about how I feel about organized religion. Anyway, do you like wearing leather? And Malcolm's like, yeah.
He's like, yeah, also, hey, man, are you gay? Which is, like, I think a pretty reasonable thing to ask at this point, because it's like, hey, like, I have, like, a weird, there's, like, a weird power dynamic here, so I don't want to be, like, you know, too overt, but, like, are you gay? Like, yeah. It's just this really awkward moment. And then, of course, he responds by going, do you think it would be hot if I was gay?
That's the most Lestat answer that he could have given. That's such a Lestat answer.
I know, but it's also like, I don't know how you take that other than yes. You know what I mean? Like, would you like it if I was? I'm just afraid I'm not. Like, I guess unless you are a trickster god, sure, you know?
He's just
the ultimate blue baller.
Like, Michael Langdon appears to, at all points, be doing a bit for, like, nobody at any given, it's just for him. He's just constantly doing a bit for himself. And, like, I love that for him. And of course, because, like, I don't think this would be a good situation in which you would say no, because, like Ty said, power dynamic. Malcolm / Gallant is like, yeah, that would be sick. I'm, like, kind of picking up some vibes. And it kind of seems like you maybe want to, like, I don't know, kiss on the mouth or something. He doesn't say all that, but, like, it's implied. Yeah. And then Michael gets weirdly close to him and then stands up and opens up the walls, ? Which is how you get in and out of this room. Which is insane. And I mean, like, he opens them like curtains, like, with his hands. It's not like he does, like, the clapper with his hand and it opens, like, a weird mechanical door. Like, he pulls the wall apart in half and is like, get the fuck out of my office. and there's so much episode left. God damn, there's so much episode left. And this isn't...
It's so weird. Yeah. Like, it's only 40 minutes, but yeah, it's just... And nothing that we're talking about seems to have any, like, importance or consequence. Yeah.
We haven't even talked about the crazy stuff yet. While everything we've talked about is extremely normal in comparison to the next 20 minutes of TV.
There's, like, a
There's going to be a part in this next episode where they, like, have somebody reveal something about themselves and they're like, oh, it's my great shame. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's so terrible. And I had to, like, go look up what was supposed to be wrong with her afterwards. I was like, did she just get, like, slapped in the back? Like, what happened here? Oh, God. And, yeah, look forward to the end of next episode because I'm not going to yell because I'm in a Discord call with my friends and I don't want to harm them, but I'm going to yell a lot internally and I hope you're here for it.
That's so fair.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Till next time, everybody. Have a great night.
Bye.